Hi there, Dr. B here with your Module 5 clarifying lecture. As usual, I'll do general comments, then we'll talk a little bit about your discussion boards, and then we'll talk a little bit about interteaching. So, Michelle, Tina, and I have noticed overall that y'all are very much improving speaking more like behaviorists, less mentalism, far fewer corrections about reinforcing behaviors over people. You're really giving that your best shot, and I appreciate that. So nice job, nice work. Let's see. This is the week, because next week is week 7, can you believe it? To check and see if you're missing assignments or you're missing grades. If you have a dash next to something, that means that nothing has been submitted there. And I know a lot of you on Google Docs assume that if it's on Google Docs that we can get to it, and that's not true. Make sure that you're putting in a link into Blackboard. I know it's an extra step. Unfortunately, Blackboard doesn't link to Google Docs, but that way we can get those grades to you and give you the credit where credit's due. So I did, on that vein, I've seen that a lot of you have not turned in module 4 yet, your draft. Even if your draft isn't done, even if it's just like halfway done, or you're not happy with the video, or it's not in your final form, you gotta give your peer reviewer something to work with. So, make sure that you get something in, and that way your peer reviewer can at least give you some feedback. So not turning in this stuff actually puts your peer reviewer at a disadvantage. If you have any grading questions, make sure you're sending them to all three of us, Michelle, Tina, and I. Don't just send me an email. I'm getting a lot of emails just to me. And we really are splitting up the duties. So make sure that you're getting in touch with Tina and Michelle as well. And just something that happened to me over the weekend that kind of want to talk about a little bit. So I ended up talking to a self-advocate with autism, and I have to say I did not do a very good job about ABA. And this person was convinced that ABA was abusive. And as I was listening to her arguments, some valid, some not so valid. I noticed something, and I think it's really important it comes back to that talking like a behaviorist thing. There's a lot of videos on YouTube that'll say something like, use what they like to get what you want. That's not what we're doing here, and it really paints us in a really difficult light. So I want you to make sure that you understand that behavior analysis isn't about getting other people to do what you want. Okay, because that would be something that would be more on the abuse lines. Behavior analysis is about using the environment to create socially significant behaviors for people who need them. So it's not trying to change people, which is sometimes the impression that people get. It's not about using what people like to get what you want. And it's about using the environment to help people change behaviors that are important to them or important to their goals, in society, or to help with functioning in society, those types of things. So really be careful how you talk about ABA and how you're talking about what you do, because you never know who's listening, and you want to make sure that you're giving off the message that you want to give off. So soapbox done. Step off there. All right, so let's talk a little bit about let's talk about the discussion boards. So there was one big thing that I think people are really still confused about. The thing is that Freud is not a behaviorist. Never was, never will be, not even close. What Skinner's doing is using Freud and Erikson. So when you're seeing other psychologists within his book, he's using that as a contrast to behaviorism. So he's so for example, this week they were talking about defense mechanisms. The defense mechanisms are Freudian, and what Skinner is saying is they're nothing special, they're just behavior, and defense mechanisms are maintained by negative reinforcement. So make sure that you're understanding that these are contrasts. They're not complementary. And I hope that helps a little bit. When you're asking questions, try to ask questions that are more centrally located to the material. Not just, do you believe that we have free will type of things. Really ask things that would require somebody to analyze and synthesize the materials. I know that Tina gave that feedback a little bit, and I do agree with that somewhat. All right, so let's talk a little bit about your inner teaching. Somebody said stimuli control. Stimulus control, that's it's one stimulus, but it can be a compound stimulus, but it's still stimulus control. Somebody used reassurance instead of reinforcer. Remember, reinforcers strengthen. Reinforcement strengthens behavior. And then coming back to my discussion about, reinforcement and how we talk about things, stimulus control is not about controlling behavior. It's another time when Skinner used the wrong term, basically. Stimulus control is actually that when you see the stimuli in your environment, which ones evoke responding? It's not about, I'm going to manipulate the environment to control the behavior. So stimulus control is all it is a signal as to whether or not reinforcement is going to be forthcoming or not forthcoming. It is not to control behavior. So make sure that you're not thinking about it in that way. Also, stimulus control is a process. It's not a product. Okay, so you can't have a stimulus under control or something like that. That doesn't happen. Stimulus control means that there is a reliable relationship between the antecedent, the response, and the reinforcer. And that usually when that antecedent is presented, engaging in that behavior will result in a reinforcer. Or in the case of S delta, not a reinforcer. So make sure that you're talking about these very specifically. Otherwise, it really looks like we're controlling people. There's a difference between a prompt and stimulus control. Prompts are used to help facilitate the process of stimulus control. So they're helper variables. They're not, and in fact, if the prompt has stimulus control over the behavior. Remember, not the person, the behavior. If the prompt has stimulus control over the behavior, that's actually a problem, because that would be what we might say in layman's terms is prompt dependency. So it's a helper variable that is used to establish that stimulus control and fade it out as quickly as possible. Also, again, motivating operations, not about motivating people, okay? It has nothing to do with motivation. Motivation is a completely different term. It's mentalistic. It's more in the realm of psychology. Motivating operations talk about whether or not the stimuli and the reinforcer are more or less effective, okay? So somebody asked me, I'm actually going to go into the questions real quick. Explain the graphic organizer. Will do. Okay, so the stimulus is like this specific thing in your environment. Okay, if that typically evokes a response and it signals that reinforcement is available. Now, how powerful are those SDs and how powerful are those reinforcers? That's where the MO comes in. So the MO is kind of like the dimmer switch on a light bulb. So if you turn it up, it's really bright. And if you turn it down, it's really low. I was telling some people, so when we talk about SDs, we usually talk about red light means stop, green light means go, yada, yada. If you're doing Simon Says, that's more of those compound stimuli. because you got to do two things. Two things need to be satisfied in order for reinforcement to be forthcoming, all that good stuff. What about the yellow light? Means slow down, take caution. That's what a lot of the people in the group said. And then I said, what does it really mean? And just about everybody said, speed up so you don't get stuck at the light. So that reinforcer of speeding up and the negative reinforcement of avoiding having to stop at the light is usually pretty strong, except in certain circumstances. So let's say there is a cop at the intersection. All of a sudden, the reinforcement for going through the light is pretty low. That's an abolishing operation. If somebody is in front of you or there's somebody in a crosswalk, those are all kind of abolishing operations. You're not going to do that thing in those. It makes the reinforcement dimmer. Not so worth it. We usually talk about this in regards to food or retail or something like that. But I'm trying to think of another one that might be that might be about motivating operations. So let's say that you have a favorite song. And when you hear the first couple of notes of that favorite song, that is the stimulus that gets you to turn up the radio. So now you can listen to your favorite song at high volume. It's very reinforcing. And every time you hear your favorite song, you do that until you've heard it so many times that's no longer reinforcing. I've got a couple of songs that way that it's like, no, not again, please. And the reinforcing value of turning up the music is lowered. So those are motivating operations that can happen in the environment. It's not about motivation. It's about the strength of that stimuli and that reinforcer. All right. Let's also talk about stimulus control in addiction. A lot of you had some good ideas, especially with stimulus control. Most of you talked about the availability of a drug. I think you probably got that from, I believe I had that in my lecture. So good to see that you're watching the lectures. That's good. There's some other ways that stimulus control can, in motivating operations, can play a role in drug addiction. If you know anybody who has been through rehab, what's the first thing that we tell people when they get out? You know, try to find a new peer group, try to find new things to do, try to find places to hang out that aren't at the bar. Because all of those things could be stimuli to use. So they could all be SDs. Being in places where drugs are available, you know, SD reinforcer type of thing. It's not about willpower. It's about reinforcement. So, you know, someone can say, oh, I have the willpower to go to the bar a week after. Now I won't drink. Behaviorism says that that only goes but so far and that it's really, really, really hard. And especially because if you've been in rehab for a while, you haven't had access to your drug of choice, and now it's available. So now you have an establishing operation. So getting high or getting drunk is actually more reinforcing because you haven't had it in a while. So, you know, you got all that kind of stuff. Plus you have some of the automatic reinforcement that comes, you know, with this, that, you know, when you take a drug, there's biological processes that happen that, you know, we call getting high or getting drunk. And all of those things are reinforcing that behavior. So all of these things, all these antecedents can all come together and hopefully it gives you a little bit more compassion if you see somebody who might be relapsing. Last thing, and this is kind of a pet peeve because Michelle and I were trained by the same person, and I pass this along to Tina. The word data is a plural noun. When we hear data is, it's like nails against a chalkboard. So remember to always say data are, not data is. All right. So you've done a good job this week. Keep up the good work. Get in those drafts. Remember, they don't have to be perfect. They don't even have to be completely finished. But you need some sort of paper, some sort of video in order for your peer reviewer to finish their job. All right, so I want you to have a good week. Take care, and we'll see you next time.